Excuse me.
All right.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. We're now on the record, and let the record show that it is 8:30 a.m. on August 27th, 2015. We are present in the commission hearing room at the state capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the public hearing in the matter of Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC. The notice of violation number 1502, this is case number RC-15-495. My name is Wade Mann, and I'm the administrative law judge designated to preside over this matter. At this time, I will have the parties note their appearances for the record, beginning with commission advocacy staff.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, counsel with the commission. Do you want me to introduce who's
Yeah, if you could, please.
With me today is the assistant director in the Reclamation Division, Dean Mose, and our witnesses, Randy Kowalski and Bruce Johnson, and an additional advocacy staff, Bill Gunnerson, all from the Reclamation Division.
Okay. And representing Coyote Creek Mining Company?
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Brian Biello with the Crowley Fleck Law Firm in Bismarck. With me, sitting next to me, is Mr. Jim Melkier, the president of Coyote Creek Mining Company. Next to him is Mr. Tony Ford. He's an attorney with Crowley Fleck. And sitting behind me is Mr. Don Steffen with Coyote Creek Mining Company and Mr. Greg Thompson with Houston Engineering.
Okay. And commission advisory staff?
Casey Fury, Special Assistant Attorney General, acting as Advisory Counsel for the Commission, and sitting at Council table with me today is Guy Welch, Environmental Scientist with the Reclamation Division, as well as Francisco Echevera, and I just butchered that, I'm sorry, but I will spell that. It's Echeverria, and he is an Environmental Engineer with the Reclamation Division as well.
Okay. And also present are the commissioners, Commission Chair Julie Fedorchek, Commissioner Randy Christman, and Commissioner Brian Kalk. The commissioners will have the opportunity shortly to make opening comments. This hearing is the result of a notice of violation filed by the Public Service Commission against Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, alleging that Coyote Creek Mining Company failed to provide erosion protection to a portion of Coyote Creek affected by the construction of a culvert crossing for a mine access road within surface coal mining permit NACC-1302. Coyote Creek requested a formal hearing and requests that the violation be vacated. Before proceeding with the evidentiary portion of the hearing, we'll just briefly address the procedure to be followed. Commission advocacy staff, as the party filing the notice of violation, will present its case first. Any witnesses called by advocacy staff will be subject to cross-examination by Mr. Biella, followed by any questions from commission advisory staff and the commissioners. Once advocacy staff completes its case, then Coyote Creek will have the opportunity to present its case in the same manner. The North Dakota Rules of Evidence will apply. Documentary evidence must be marked, identified, and offered. No decision will be reached on the matter today. These proceedings are being digitally recorded. And with that, are there any preliminary matters or procedural issues that should be addressed before we get started? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I don't have any.
Okay. Mr. Biella?
I would just like to make a short opening statement, but whenever you feel that's appropriate.
Yeah, in a moment, we'll allow the opportunity for that. So, Ms. Fury?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding the email that was sent out to all parties that made a notice of appearance, I believe that was August 26th. That email was regarding documents that were inadvertently left with Commissioner Christman during a discussion. And just to clarify so that everyone is aware, those documents were public record. They were part of Coyote Creek's Revision 1. To their permit. And so at this time, I do have specific copies of the portion of those documents. It wasn't the whole permit. It was just specific sections and a map. We can either enter those as exhibits or just maybe take administrative notice and incorporate that permit revision in this record.
My understanding is that there's maybe some markings on them, so maybe
there is.
Just take notice, maybe have them actually offered and admitted
would okay.
probably be a better approach.
Okay.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any?
Yeah, I think taking administrative notice would not be appropriate. I think they do need to be part of the record. And they probably should go in as they are. Ms. Fury made a comment at the very end of her request about referencing the permit, but they're just part of the permit, so I think they should just go in as they are, whatever pages are there.
We, Your Honor, we would ask that both go in, so this the documents that are marked specifically that were reviewed by Commissioner Christman, and then we would also ask that the whole permit revision be incorporated in the record. And the reason that I would ask that is because there are portions of the permit revision in these specific documents that are included. And so if the commissioners did feel that they want to reference back to some of the information that's specifically referenced in these sections, they would then be able to do so because the whole revision is on record. So I would ask that the whole permit revision be included on record, as well as submitting the specific documents with the written notations on them.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We don't have any objection to that, but we should identify it by, I think, case number and docket number, because I don't think we want to reproduce it.
And I have those available.
Okay. You're just talking about the second exhibit that she was identifying?
Well, I think it'll end up being three, because I don't think these are huge documents, DVD-type things, if you were to reproduce
all three?
Them. No, the permit and the revision.
I'm just speaking to the permit revision being incorporated. So specifically NACC 1302, and I believe that was approved in RC 14846.
Mr. Biella, do you have any thoughts or any objections to offering any of these items as exhibits?
No, Your Honor, we don't. They're matters of public record anyway, so we have no objection.
Sure.
Ms. Jeff, Your Honor, I think that we could sort out at a break exactly what document we need to reference,
sure.
But we have no objection. We agree right. It's public. It's part of the record of this mine.
That's fine. I guess I thought we could get it stipulated in right now, but if we need to do it later to have an opportunity to go over to see exactly what we need admitted as exhibits, we can do it later.
We could get the first one in right now, the papers.
The document with the highlighting on? All right, let's
just
do that.
The reference to the thing we're not going to make a copy of.
Sure. Let's do that. Ms. Fury, do you have copies? Do you have those?
You know, I do have a copy of the marked up version. We do have clean copies of multiples of only the clean version. So I would have to submit them maybe at a break just to make copies of the marked up version, but I can submit to you that right now if you'd like.
I think the marked up version is what we're referencing
right.
as Exhibit 1, right?
Right. And those just didn't get copied.
All right. Well, yeah. We'll do it all later on then.
Okay.
So, any other preliminary matters, Ms. Fury? Anything?
That's all, Your Honor.
Okay. At this time, we'll take opening comments from the commissioners first. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, good morning, everyone. Glad to be here today. I've gone through all the materials that were produced and a part of the docket on this case to date, and just look forward to hearing what more the both sides have to offer in terms of insights on this issue. It seems fairly straightforward, but there must be more to it, so I look forward to hearing from all of you and learning that. So thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
I don't have a lot of opening comments either. I guess one thing that's been made clear is it shows that we read our material before the stuff. That I noticed that there was something that shouldn't have been mine when as I was going through it. But anyway, that'll all get resolved. And I thought a lot of the information provided in advance was very helpful and useful and understandable. The one lingering question that seems to confuse a lot of other things as I read through this, and so I'm throwing this out just in hopes that it will be clarified very early on, is in one document the low flow culvert is referred to as a 36-inch culvert, and other places it's a 60-inch culvert, and I keep wondering, are we talking about two different culverts, or was it switched at a certain point, or if it was switched, was it supposed to have been, or is that an issue in all this, or what? But it does seem confusing that things bounce back and forth between 60 and 36-inch references. So hopefully that will be clarified early on.
Commissioner Kolk?
Yeah, I think Randy and Julie set it up beautifully with the facts. I think are laid out there pretty clear. Just must be something that'll get flushed out today. And Randy brings out one of the questions. Appreciate everyone doing this as quickly as needed to be, because the time frames and these kind of things are pretty quick. We had X amount of days to have this hearing. We have X amount of days to have a decision. So I imagine once this is done today, we'll schedule a work session and make a decision pretty quick. So look forward to a good hearing today. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, do you have an opening statement?
Yes, a very short one, because we too think it's a pretty simple case and we should stay focused on the issue. And we think that the issue is whether the company met its burden to control erosion, which there is a statutory requirement for mining companies to control erosion, and a supplementary rule on the same topic. And this company was written up after inspection for failing to control erosion. We, too, are wondering what else will be brought out here today that might refute that obligation sufficiently that an NOV should not be issued. But the staff's position is that the company did not meet its legal burden to control erosion. All I have.
Okay. Mr. Biella?
Yes, Your Honor. In essence, what is contained in the NOV is Coyote Creek Mine has been cited for erosion at an isolated feature within the Hall Road crossing of Coyote Creek, which we call the island. The NOV, in our opinion, does not take into consideration the erosion control plan that was implemented by the mine and the effect that that plan had on controlling erosion during a significant water flow event on June 22nd. The issue is, we believe, is were the best management practices, the BMPs, employed by the mine, did they in fact control erosion and protect the downstream water quality of Coyote Creek? We believe when you look at the BMPs in total and the overall effect of that rainfall event and water flow event, that the BMPs did in fact control erosion as best was possible. In addition, Cow Creek Mine strenuously objects to the finding of negligence. The BMP plan that was adopted and then put in place and constructed was a good plan, we believe effectively controlled erosion, did work very well during that runoff event, so we believe the finding of negligence is totally unwarranted. What we're asking as we go through this today is that you look at the big picture, not just this isolated event of erosion to one small feature. That question is, were the BMPs that the mine put in place effective to control erosion? We believe the answer is absolutely yes. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, are you ready to present your case?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I will call Randy Kowalski to the stand.
Mr. Kowalski, is it?
Yes, it is,
okay.
Your Honor.
Before you testify, I'm required to give you an oath. I need to advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay. Go ahead.
Good morning. Please state your name again for the record and spell your last name.
Okay. Again, my name is Randy Kowalski, and my last name is spelled K-O-W-A-L-S-K-I.
And for the record, where are you employed, and what is your business address?
I am employed with the North Dakota Public Service Commission, and the address is 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Bismarck, North Dakota.
What is your position with the Public Service Commission?
My position here is an environmental scientist.
And how long have you held this position?
I've been in this position for 4 years now.
Could you please briefly describe your professional education?
Okay, I have a bachelor's of science degree from North Dakota State University in agriculture. I earned that in 1987.
And can you please tell us something about your professional experience?
Okay, my work experience, from 1988 to 1990, I was employed with the University of Nebraska's Institute of Agriculture and Natural Resources as a research soil scientist in their Conservation and Survey Division. I worked in western Nebraska on a county-level soil survey mapping project with NRCS personnel. The mapping involved evaluation of landscapes and soil properties in order to delineate soil map units in the North Platte River Valley, sandhill areas, and uplands with silt-covered bedrock. The primary land uses in that area were grazing on the native grassland areas and both irrigated and non-irrigated crop production. In 1990, I began employment with the North Dakota Department of Health's Water Quality Division as an environmental scientist. As a member of the Health Department staff, I was involved with all aspects of the state's program for permitting wastewater discharges from municipal and industrial facilities as specified and required under Section 402 of the Clean Water Act. I was responsible for reviewing permit applications, water quality data, evaluating both for the potential water quality impacts, and writing numeric and narrative standards and conditions to prevent adverse effects on water quality and potential uses. In this position, I managed permits and conducted site inspections at various municipal and industrial sites, including the coal mines. In 2011, I began employment with the North Dakota Public Service Commission in the Reclamation Division. The Reclamation Division is responsible for permitting and regulating the operation of all active coal mining operations in North Dakota through the Surface Mining Regulatory Program, consistent with and approved by the Office of Surface Mining, a division of the United States Department of Interior. The Reclamation Division is responsible for ensuring that surface coal mining and reclamation operations are carried out in an environmentally sound manner, and that the interests of the public and affected property owners are protected in accordance with state and federal laws.
Now, can you tell me, describe your responsibilities in the Reclamation Division in your position?
Okay, along with the other employees of the division, we conduct detailed technical reviews of applications for coal mine permits, permit revisions, and permit renewals to ensure that the regulatory requirements are met and that the planned operations are technically sound. My areas of technical expertise are in the surface water hydrology and management, vegetation and land use areas, primary cropland, and soil handling procedures. We provide recommendations to the Commission on pending applications and enforcement matters. We also conduct site inspections for compliance and quality assurance during mining operations and the reclamation process. A good share of an inspection at a mine is devoted to observing and discussing the operations and noting preventative or corrective measures in order to avoid a potential violation or a problem that could affect bond release. We need to be aware of all aspects of the regulations while we're in the field. We also need to review and approve certain steps in the operation that we review during an inspection, such as soil removal, grading prior to soil respread, and pond removals, just to name a few. Typically, we inspect active operations twice a month with additional visits for specific issues that may require additional information or division approval before operations may continue.
Now, what are your specific responsibilities in relation to the Coyote Creek mine?
I've been involved with the Coyote Creek mining permit from the time it was first proposed to the Reclamation Division and serve as the permit review coordinator for the Coyote Creek mine permit applications. In the process, I've participated in site reviews prior to permit issuance and conduct inspections at the permit area on a regular basis. As permit coordinator, I'm responsible for preparing the correspondence that needs to go to the advisory agencies during the permit review process. I consolidate the staff comments for the permit review letters, and I prepare the final documents for consideration by the commissioners. Other than that, my responsibilities are the same as those mentioned previously.
So can you now summarize your experience in carrying out these responsibilities?
I guess, you know, with the reclamation staff, we've reviewed it. The application submitted in 2011 by BNI Coal Mine at Center for a new permit area that was similar in size to Coyote Creek. So prior to dealing with Coyote Creek, I worked through the process with a new application at the regarding another coal mine in the state. I've also been involved with technical reviews for two currently pending new permit applications, both from the Health Department side and with the Reclamation Division. I have review responsibilities for various renewals and revision applications on an ongoing basis. I also review and have coordinated the review of bond release applications. I have also been the lead reviewer for several sediment pond removal and reclamation requests. The bond release applications and pond removal requests must meet conditions specified in state law and our rules. And these applications are reviewed for content and appropriate notification to the public. And in the case of bond release, a recommendation is then made to the commissioners. And if approved, the reclamation bond may be reduced accordingly. I conduct inspections at all the coal mine operations in the state and was involved with the review and considerations of penalty recommendations for at least two notice of violations.
Other ones. In addition to this. I offer the further testimony of this witness as that of an expert.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Okay. Ms. Fury?
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. The testimony of Mr. Kowalski will be received as that of an expert. Yes.
Well, now that we have those preliminary matters out of the way, I just want you to know if you start having way too much fun up there, just let me know. I'll figure out something to do about it. Okay. Or Mr. Biella will. I'm showing you what's been marked as PSC Staff Exhibit 1. And others are receiving copies. Do you recognize the document?
Yes.
What is it?
This is a copy of the Notice of Violation issued to Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, for failure to control erosion.
And this is the reason we're here.
Yes, it is.
I am going to move the admission of Exhibit 1 without
any
further.
Any objection, Mr. Biella?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Fury?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Exhibit 1 is admitted.
Thank you. I'd like you to provide a little background now to the commission, so I'm going to ask you some questions about the original permit application. And that would be, I believe, permit NACC-1302. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Does that permit application, did that contain design plans for what is known as the Shop Access Road and Coyote Creek Crossing?
Yes, it does.
And you mentioned that you were part of the permit review as permit coordinator. Is that correct?
Yes.
So during your technical review of this application for the permit for NACC-1302, did you or others working on the permit express any concerns about the Coyote Creek crossing to the company? And if so, please elaborate.
Yes. During the technical review, the access road crossing over Kyle Creek, the area of concern here, was the subject of at least one deficiency and several plan revisions. Technical item number 47 in our August 25, 2014 technical review letter questioned the alignment of the proposed box culvert, which it consisted of four 10-foot sections wide, a 4x10, we call it, box culvert. The design plan showed the box culvert directed at the opposite stream bank, a meander point in the Coyote Creek. We suggested that the alignment be changed or that the company provided additional measures to stabilize and protect the area opposite of the outlet. In Coyote Creek's subsequent response, the design plan for the access road crossing over Coyote Creek was revised so the outlet of the box culvert would line up with the stream channel. A low-flow culvert just to the east of the box culvert was also proposed as part of the design plan with an outlet that was in line with the stream channel.
Okay, I'm going to interject some questions we didn't talk about. The low-flow culvert that they had proposed in addition with the box, mm-hmm. is that the 36-inch culvert?
Yes, at this point it was
specified
as 36-inch.
Commissioner Chrisman, at this point in time, the company in their plans were proposing a 36-inch culvert. Is that correct statement?
That was our understanding.
Okay. Thank you. May I?
Yes.
Now, you've received a copy of what's been marked as PSC Staff Exhibit 2, and do you recognize this document?
Yes, I do.
And what is this exhibit?
This is one page, page 8, of the Reclamation Division's August 25, 2014 technical review letter to the company containing deficiency item number 47 that we just discussed.
And is this a normal process to review a permit application and then gather up all of the issues that staff finds and respond back to the company in a technical review letter like this with all the things they need to tweak?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Was this document prepared by you or by others in the division in the regular course of business?
Yes, the document was prepared by the technical staff assigned to review the permit application. In addition to the supervisors, the document is part of the records of the division for this permit.
I'll move the admission of Exhibit 2.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Exhibit 2 is admitted.
Okay. So now you've got PSC Staff Exhibit 3, and do you recognize this document?
Yes.
And what is this exhibit?
This exhibit is actually copies of the design drawings for the crossing area from the permit, taken from the original permit and subsequent applications for permit revision number 1. To permit NACC 1302. These drawings show the plan modifications made to the low flow and box culverts over time. The first drawing is the initial plan proposed in the July 31st, 2014 version of the permit application and was subject of a deficiency item in our August 25, 2014 letter to Coyote Creek Mining Company.
And I'm going to interrupt for 1 minute. That's the letter we just talked about.
Correct.
So the first page was the subject of part of that letter.
Correct.
Okay. Go proceed, please.
The next drawing shows the revised plan to orientate the culvert in line with the stream channel. The revised plan was submitted in the September 15th, 2014 version of the permit application. And this plan remained as shown in the final version of the permit that was approved then on October 22nd, 2014.
So the second page depicts the what would be in the approved permit.
Correct. Would go on to be in the approved permit.
You may proceed.
Okay, the third page of this set is from the March 10th, 2015 version of revision number one to permit NACC 1302. This was at the deemed complete stage of our application review process. Revision one proposed a slight change to the crossing to remove a bend in the proposed low flow culvert that appeared earlier and replace some erosion protection materials for the box culvert inlet and outlet, but the location of the culvert inlets and outlets remain the same as was approved in the initial permit.
Okay. Go ahead.
The last in the series was submitted in the May 15th, 2015 version of revision one to the permit during our technical review stage. At this point in time, the low flow culvert had already been installed and the plan was revised to show how the low flow culvert was actually installed. The culvert now enters the stream channel at a near 90 degree angle, thus the outlet is directed directly at the opposite stream bank of Coyote Creek. This revised plan also showed the planned removal of the meander bend that was cut off to form the island, as it's referred to later, when the low flow culvert was installed. This is also the design that appears in the final version of revision one as approved on June 17, 2015.
Okay, so this is what appears in the final version of revision one.
Correct.
Correct. And one other thing I'm going to add, I don't know if I'm right here, but you can correct me. The low flow culvert depicted here is the 60 inch. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Was this exhibit prepared by you or under your direction and control, the actual drawings?
No.
Who prepared the documents that make up the exhibit?
Coyote Creek Mining Company prepared the drawings that make up this exhibit, as noted above. The originals of these drawings can be found in the noted permit filings. The documents were filed with the Reclamation Division in the regular course of business and are part of the record of the division for this permit. We reproduced the drawings and compiled the exhibit to illustrate the changes in the company's design in the permit and construction process for this access road feature.
I will move the admission of Exhibit 3.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Exhibit 3 is admitted.
Thank you. Now, you mentioned in your general description of your duties that you do perform routine inspections of this and every other mine. During your routine inspections of this mine, were you able to observe the installation of the low-flow culvert?
Yes, partly. On October 13, 2015, Bill Gunnarsson from our division and I conducted an inspection at Coyote Creek Mine.
Excuse me. You said October of 2015, but we haven't reached that yet. Is that an error? A Brano?
that would be a Brano.
Okay. Let's correct it.
Let's try this again. Okay. On April 13th, 2015, this year, this past April, Bill Gunnarsson and I conducted an inspection at the Coyote Creek Mine. On that day, the low-flow culvert was being installed for the access road crossing over Coyote Creek just west of the shop office complex. The landowner had accompanied us on this review of the stream crossing area and other work areas at that time. He was primarily interested in soil handling practices as summarized in our April 13th inspection report.
So the landowner was interested in soil handling practices and accompanied you while you looked for these issues and possibly others.
Correct. We were just making general observations. We were not looking for anything in particular, except I think there was one issue with soil removal near the shop area that the landowner was interested in that we wanted to look at and view with him.
Now, at this inspection on April 13, did you express any concerns to the company regarding the installation of the low-flow culvert?
Yes, during this inspection, it was noted and we informed mine personnel that the approved plan for the creek crossing had specified that the box culverts would be installed prior to the low-flow culvert and the closing of the natural stream channel. This procedure change presented a concern because the stream would be constricted to just the capacity of the low flow culvert until the box culverts could be installed. Kyle Creek Mining Company was advised to refrain or be cautious from building any segment of the shop road access road near Kyle Creek that would function as an embankment and cause upstream flooding if the stream flow is constricted by this low flow culvert or constricted just to the low flow culvert during this time.
So before I go on to Exhibit 4, I'm just going to have you summarize that so I'm sure I understand. I'm going to reword it. But basically, they have an approved plan for box culverts and then a low-flow culvert put in afterwards, in addition to but after. They switch that around, but you guys don't know about it until you walk out there on the inspection.
Correct. This was the first we became aware of this change in procedure and...
And on that day, there's a low-flow culvert in, but there are no box culverts in yet.
Correct.
Okay. I will show you what's been marked as Exhibit 4, if I may.
Go ahead.
Do you recognize this document?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
This is the inspection report from our April 13th inspection at the Kyle Creek Mine.
And that's the inspection we were just talking about?
Correct.
Was this inspection report prepared by you or under your direction or control?
The report was prepared jointly with the other inspector.
I'll move the admission of Exhibit 4. Excuse me.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Exhibit 4 is admitted.
Do you know if any additional construction activities were conducted on Coyote Creek Crossing after April 15 of 2015?
Not to my knowledge. I believe that no work occurred in Coyote Creek after April 15th, at least until after June 1st, to comply with the requirements of the United States Army Corps of Engineers permits, Kyle Creek Mining Company would have been required to not do any work in Kyle Creek between April 15th and June 1st. The requirement is intended to minimize disturbance to the stream bed during a time period that is critical for reproduction of resident aquatic species, aquatic life.
Has the Reclamation Division received any complaints or requests for inspections regarding the Coyote Creek crossing?
Yes.
What did you receive?
Mr. Casey Voigt contacted our division in the later part of June of 2015 and requested that an inspection be made at Coyote Creek Mine and stated that he was concerned with flooding that had occurred at the box culvert installation site.
Okay, and when you say box culvert installation site, you're talking about the spot but not the culverts because they're not installed yet. Is that correct?
This was during the installation process.
Okay.
Apologize.
Okay. What was the division's response to the filing? Did you conduct an inspection following his request?
Yes. On June 25th, 2015, Bill Gunnarsson and I conducted an inspection at the Kyle Creek Mine. This was just shortly after the request. We were informed of the request. The inspection was on our inspection schedule for the month and had planned to conduct the inspection on this particular day, regardless. This inspection... during this inspection, we were also able to accommodate the landowner's request for an inspection to be made at the mine. We also met with Mr. Casey Voigt prior to beginning the inspection at Kyle Creek Mine, and with him we discussed his observations regarding high creek flows that had resulted from heavy rain events during this June 19th through June 21st time period. And
so did you participate in this June 25th inspection?
Yes.
Please tell the commission what observations you made during that inspection.
We began our inspection at the access road box culvert installation site, our main area of interest for this inspection. We had spent a good share of time at the crossing site taking photographs and discussing their observations, the company personnel's observations and response to the runoff events leading up to the flooding at the box culvert installation site, which occurred on June 22nd. Water had flowed over the low section in the road at the box culvert site without flooding a noticeable area of undisturbed land up gradient of the road. In the areas of Coyote Creek Channel observed during the inspection, it appeared that the flow, while high, remained within the banks of Coyote Creek. The visual appearance of the creek banks downstream of the road crossing and the work area was similar to what was viewed upstream of the site.
Well, I'll show you what's been marked as Staff Exhibit 5, if I may, Your Honor.
Yep, go ahead.
Do you recognize this document?
Yes.
And what is it?
This is the June 25th inspection report.
And was this report prepared by you or under your direction and control?
Yes, the report was prepared jointly with the other inspector.
I'll move the admission of Exhibit 5.
Mr. Biella?
One second.
Sure.
No objection, Your Honor.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Exhibit 5 is admitted.
Thank you. Did any other inspections of the Coyote Creek mine take place on June 25th?
Yes. Also on June 25th, the Reclamation Division conducted flyover inspections of the active coal mines in the state. We normally arrange a flight annually to observe the active mining and, in particular, the reclamation progress at coal mining operations. These inspections provide an opportunity for us to view and photo document conditions at permit areas. For this inspection, we were able to compare and relate observations taken on the ground with photographs and video taken from the air.
You indicated that photos and a video of the Coyote Creek mine were taken on this flyover inspection. Were these photos and the video reviewed by you and analyzed by you or others following your June 25th inspection?
Yes, they were.
When you reviewed them, what did you find? What did your review or analysis indicate?
Okay, the aerial photographs and the video from the June 25th 2015 flyover inspection showed a substantial cut or erosion feature in the Coyote Creek stream bank opposite of the low flow culvert
Did that prompt, that observation prompt any action by division staff?
Yes.
Based on that observation, what action did the Reclamation Division take?
We conducted a follow-up inspection on June 30th, 2015, to thoroughly inspect the low-flow culvert outlet area.
Please discuss the observation staff made during the June 30th inspection.
This inspection confirmed that the stream bank directly across from the 60-inch culvert was eroded, apparently due to high volume discharge flows from the culvert. We estimated that the erosion feature was 15 to 20 feet wide and that same dimension deep into the bank, as well as 10 feet deep from the natural ground surface down to the water level that we could see. We noticed that the soil in the erosion cut had smooth swept appearance and was undercut near the water line of the stream. We observed many exposed roots on the face, along with some plants that were hanging inverted on the feature. The stream flow at the base of the feature appeared to be making a gentle swirl pattern on the day, as we've seen it on the day of the visit.
Okay. With permission,
yes.
I'd like to show you Exhibit 6.
Kind of like Vanna White.
What college education did you use?
So, do you recognize Exhibit 6?
Yes, this is our June 30th, 2015 inspection report.
Was it prepared by you or at your direction and control?
Yes, the report was prepared jointly with the other inspector.
I'll move the admission of Exhibit 6.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Okay. Exhibit 6 is admitted.
Thank you. Now I'd like to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 7. Note that there are two pages to Exhibit 7. Do you recognize Exhibit 7?
Yes, it is.
What is this?
Exhibit 7 consists of two aerial photos of the site identified as the Coyote Creek crossing work area. One of the photos is kind of a larger view of the area around the box culvert site, showing the shop and office area under construction, kind of on the right-hand side of the photo. The other is a more close-up photograph of the actual crossing site construction area.
So the first one is the aerial, and then the second one is the close-up, correct?
Well, they're both aerial images. Just one is the wider angle.
Right.
One
okay.
is more close up.
Sorry. Were these photos prepared by you or other division staff in the regular course of business?
Yes.
Who took the photos and video, and for what purpose?
Yeah, the photos and video were taken during the flyover inspection, and they were taken by Guy Welsh and Matt Fisher of our staff. The flyover inspection is normally made once a year to evaluate and document conditions at each of our active mines, as I said earlier. Labels and notes were added by staff when reproducing the photos as an exhibit for this hearing.
So these the notation or the code, it was added for the purpose of using it as an exhibit at this hearing?
Correct.
Okay. Now, can you explain the features on the photos?
Okay, we'll start with the larger area view, and you'll see the shop office area on the right side, and then the access road extends kind of to the left from that, or going west, and you'll see the box culvert and Coyote Creek crossing area kind of in the middle of the photo, and you know, the various items we've been talking about are labeled on there. The other photo, the more close-up image, shows the crossing work area. We can also see the erosion feature that we've been discussing, the low-flow culvert inlet and outlet locations, along with the box culvert in as it's being installed.
Now, is one photo an actual photo and one a still from a video?
Yes.
Do you know which is which?
Yes. The close-up photo that I was just talking about is actually a still frame from the video taken during the June 25th flyover inspection.
So that's 7-2 with two in parentheses.
Yes.
And 7-1 is an actual photo.
Yes.
I move the admission of Exhibit 7.
Mr. Biella, any objection to either 7-1 or 7-2?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Fury?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Exhibit 7 is admitted.
Now, you explained that the low-flow culvert outlet was inspected during the June 30th inspection. Please describe your observations at the culvert outlet at that time.
Okay, we noted that the culvert is positioned in a manner that it outlets at a nearly right angle to the stream channel. It appeared that these flows from the culvert hit the opposite bank, thus creating an erosion feature. We observed no stabilization or erosion protection or remnants of erosion control measures on the stream bank opposite of the culvert outlet. The culvert outlet was fitted with a flared end section and did have rock riprap placed in the area adjacent to the culvert outlet. Large riprap was also placed at the base of the cofferdam installed in the stream channel in order to facilitate placement of the box culverts. These areas did not appear to have substantial erosion. The access road that bisects Coyote Creek in the area of numerous stream meanders, making it a difficult area to work in, we understand. The erosion took place on a floodplain and what is termed an island that was developed during the installation process of when the original stream meander was trenched across to facilitate construction of the low-flow culvert. This island area was less than an acre in size and was dominated by shrub and natural floodplain vegetation. The permit soil survey mapped the island area as straw loam channeled with 1-6% slopes. We expect 18 inches of topsoil and 42 inches of subsoil. Mine personnel indicated that the island would be removed and the area would be stabilized with concrete matting. However, they indicated that they did not plan to remove the island until the box culvert installation was complete.
And I just want to be sure I understand. The island was created because a channel was dug from one part of the stream to the other, and at a meander point or a twist.
Correct.
And the reason for digging the channel was there a purpose for that channel?
As it was relayed to us, or the impression we got in that April 13th inspection was it was needed so they could better place the low-flow culvert that would divert the flow away from their work area at the culvert outlet.
So it would be easier to install a culvert.
The low-flow.
Low-flow.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. I do want to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 8. May?
Yes.
Note that there are three pages marked 8-1, 8-2, and 8-3. Do you recognize Exhibit 8?
Yes.
Can you tell me what it is?
This would be three photos of the erosion feature and the downstream area at the low-flow culvert at the shop access road crossing over Coyote Creek.
Okay, we'll give them a minute to get those out. They're good for seeing and hard for passing out. Okay. Were the three photos prepared by you or others in the division in the regular course of business?
Yes, these photographs are from our inspection on June 30th.
Are they all from the inspection on June 30th?
I believe so.
I will move the admission of Exhibit 8.
Mr. Biela, any objection to any of the three photos making up Exhibit 8?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Fury?
No, Your Honor.
Exhibit 8 is admitted.
Following the June 30th inspection, what did the Reclamation Division staff do?
The principal inspectors and engineer for the mine met to review the data and decided that an NOV was appropriate and issued NOV or notice of violation on July 7th for failure to control erosion at a culvert outlet. And this would have been citing North Dakota Century Code 3814.1-2415 and North Dakota Administrative Code 69-5.2-24-035B.
And these are noted in the NOV, so nobody has to write those numbers down, correct?
Correct.
Did the NOV require an abatement plan?
Yes.
And what did that plan entail?
The NOV required that Coyote Creek Mining Company submit a plan for stabilization and protection of the culvert outlet and or the removal of the island feature.
Did the mining company complete the abatement plan?
Yes, they did. Coyote Creek Mining Company removed the island feature and thus no further soil loss would occur from that area. The box culvert was completed and the concrete matting was installed at the outlet. Additional rock riprap was placed on each side of the low-flow culvert.
Were you involved in reaching a recommended penalty that the reclamation staff or division proposes the commission impose?
Yes.
Do you have a recommendation for the commission at this time regarding the recommended fine?
Yes.
And what is that recommendation?
We recommend a total penalty of $3,000.
And can you explain why you recommend that the commission impose the $3,000 fine?
Yes, the permittee failed to take steps to plan, construct, and operate a culvert outlet in a manner that prevented erosion as required by state law and our rules. The result of this action was to harm one of the area's few perennial streams. This is in addition to the stresses to the resident aquatic life in the stream that would occur due to the planned activities this year in the area. The erosion also resulted in the loss of soil material from the affected area. The authorization and responsibility for the commission to serve a permittee with a notice of violation is outlined in North Dakota Century Code Section 38-14.1-28. The State Surface Mining and Reclamation operations law goes on to provide guidance on the assessment of penalties. Under North Dakota Century Code Section 38-14.1-32, a fine may be assessed for violations, and the amount determined must be based on the consideration of four factors: the permittee's history of previous violations at the same mine, the seriousness of the violation, and any irreparable harm to the environment or hazard to public health or safety, the permittee's degree of negligence, if any, and any demonstrated good faith of the permittee in attempting to achieve rapid compliance once notified of the violation. The Commission's rules provide a more detailed description of the factors to be considered in making penalty recommendations at North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-5.2-28-12. In determining the recommended penalty in this instance, staff followed the provisions of the law and rule and assigned a penalty for the following amounts for the four required components. For history of violations, we assessed $0. For seriousness, we assessed $1,500. For negligence, we assessed $1,500. And for good faith, zero.
Thank you. That's all we have.
Okay. Mr. Biella?
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, Randy, you had indicated that you conducted an inspection on June 25, 2015. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that was after the June 22nd runoff event that caused significant water flows through the mine area on that date. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, you indicated that on that June 25 inspection, you were accompanied by another inspector, Mr. Gunnarsson, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you recall that inspector telling Mr. Don Steffen of Kyle Creek Mine that he saw no violation on that date?
I don't recall that specifically. I know we did not observe or make any specific documentation of the feature across from the low-flow culvert. We were looking probably more big picture of the area on that day, and in particularly, how did the box culvert excavation site and box culvert installation site, which handled the flood flow, how did that hold up? What was our thoughts on how that held up? And so I think we went away probably surprised that we didn't see more damage that day, and we didn't have enough to go on in order to make a determination on an issuing of notice of violation on that day.
So are you aware if Mr. Gunnarsson made that statement to Mr. Steffen, that he saw no violation?
I guess I'm not aware. I don't know what he saw that day specifically.
Now, the NOV wasn't issued until after the June 30th inspection, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, we just mentioned that there was a significant creek flows on June 22nd, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, between the June 25 inspection and the June 30 inspection, are you aware of any other significant rainfall and runoff events at the mine that would have caused additional erosion?
No, I'm not. And I do not believe such an event occurred. And I did note in the second inspection that the water level in the creek was lower than the earlier inspection.
Was the reason for the second inspection on June 30 and the ultimate issuance of the NOV due to the complaint filed by Casey Voigt?
No, it was not.
You indicated, though, you went out there because of his concerns, right?
Yeah, as I tried to indicate, we had already planned an inspection for that week. I was going to probably go alone that day that we did go, the 25th. The day before or a day or two prior, Mr. Voigt had contacted Jim or Dean, and then they relayed the information back to me that he was requested this inspection. We already knew, but he also wanted to meet with us, but he did not want to go on the inspection.
Now, you'd mentioned what we call the island, and you described it that way, too. Now, you were aware that that was planned on being removed just a few days later?
A few days later from when?
From the June 30 inspection.
No, we did not go away with that impression. We did not know what the time frame was. I think it was still somewhat uncertain that was whether it would be at the very end of the installation of the culvert or...
Okay. But you were aware it was going to be removed.
That was the understanding we gathered from that inspection.
The mine has indicated that that island actually was intended and did function as a BMP. Would you dispute that?
I'm just going to interrupt. Let's not use an acronym, please, okay, for the record.
Best management practice, BMP.
I guess without a best management practice plan in front of me to describe how it was going to be used, I don't see where it was planned to be used that way. It served as part of the cofferdam for installing the box culvert. They tied into the island area. Unfortunately, there was still an issue with the outlet from the low flow culvert that was carrying the flow at that time.
Okay. Now, the Hall Road crossing of the creek, that was still under construction when inspected on June 25 and again on June 30. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm looking for exhibit number one, the NOV. The regulation that's cited there on page two, this is your exhibit one. NDAC 69-5.2-24-03-5B. Is that correct?
Please repeat.
The NOV cites regulation violated as 69-5.2-24-03-5B. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, that regulation deals with what are known as primary roads. Is that correct?
Correct.
And a primary road, that's a term of art in the coal mining business. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the citation, as I understand, would be for a violation of what's called a primary road. Is that correct?
It's under that section of our rules.
Okay. Now, this haul road, at the time of these two inspections, had not been completed, had it?
No, it had not.
And thus it had not been certified by an engineer to be a primary road, is that correct?
That I do not know. I'm not the engineer, I'm not involved with certification.
But I think it would be pretty logical to conclude it couldn't have been certified as a primary road yet because it was still under construction, is that correct?
That could be, but it was being used for mine traffic and we hauling fill and getting to and from the areas to the west that were being built. So it was daily use road during this time period.
had it been certified as a primary road by an engineer at the time of your June 30 inspection?
I do not know that.
One of my last question, is one of the overriding purposes of the mining law to protect and preserve water quality?
I guess I couldn't quote specifically, but that is in our scope of work that we've in regulating the coal mining operations.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Fury, do you have any questions?
Yes, Your Honor. You had mentioned that the island was covered in shrub, natural floodplain vegetation. And it's been stated that Coyote Creek did have plans to remove the island. Had the island not been subject to the erosion event, what would have likely have occurred to that vegetation material that was on the island that was then eroded away?
I'm not exactly sure. I guess we'd be speculating, but I mean, if it was.
I guess I'll rephrase my question. Coyote Creek has stated that that island was being planned to be removed, and a portion of that island could not be removed because it had been subject to that erosion feature. Had it not been eroded away, that section of island, what would have Coyote Creek been required to do with that portion of native vegetation?
To do with the vegetation?
Yes. Were there any requirements specifically to do anything in particular with the topsoil or subsoil?
Okay. If the plan was going to continue to remove this meander island area, even if it had not been eroded, they would still have to recover that soil or salvage the soil material from that.
And they were unable to do so in this event because that specific portion was eroded away. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. In your experience, is it a best management practice to use natural vegetation as an erosion management control?
In some circumstances, it has its limitations.
Could you please elaborate?
I guess I might leave that more to our engineer for this mine.
That's fine. One more question. What erosion control measures, could you please provide examples, would you have expected to see on the island just opposite of the outlet?
I guess one possibility would have been riprap or large rock like they had used to protect the cofferdam they built across the channel to continue that around to be in front of the outlet. That would have been one option. And the other would have been if it's going to be very short term, there's heavy blanket type materials for erosion control that could have been placed on that slope, stapled down, used fence posts to anchor this down. There's a plastic or nylon type product that's used in municipal applications to place around the outlet of culverts. It's probably a quarter inch thick. It has probably 2 inch or inch and a half holes in it. You lay it down like a mat. It functions, serves the same purpose as rock riprap by preventing erosion around the outlet of a culvert. Flat material, lightweight, could have been placed, could have been removed when the soil was going to be salvaged, used at another location.
And have you seen these commonly used at other mine sites?
Rock riprap is commonly used. Erosion control blanket is used commonly.
And so you would consider those best management practices?
Correct.
Okay. Nothing further.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Chair, I would defer to the portfolio holder, Randy, if he wants to go first.
Certainly. Commissioner Crisman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Exhibit 3. I'm still hung up on which stage along the way this went from 36-inch to 60-inch and if what importance that might be.
Okay, to our knowledge, and I think the plans reflected this, that, you know, the initial plan was specifying a 36-inch culvert. Even all the way through approval of the initial permit, it was in the plans as a 36-inch culvert. In revision 1 to the permit, I think it initially came in still as a 36-inch culvert. It didn't get changed, at least to our knowledge, until the time of installation. And when it was installed was when we became aware of it being a 60-inch culvert rather than a 36-inch culvert. That was a decision they made, whether it was to better handle flows or materials they had available. They made that decision. So that's where the change from this 36-inch initial plan was described or referred to a 60-inch was the ultimately installed culvert size. And that would have been in that April 13th time frame. Actually, at the April 13th, we weren't exactly sure that it was 36-inch. We didn't notice that change until probably later. But
if it had been 36 inches instead of 60, do you think this erosion would have been more or less? Would it have taken less water and had less erosion, or would it have come out at even higher pressure and caused more?
It could be either way, Commissioner. I would probably defer that question to Bruce Johnson, our engineer.
How many yards of material do you think were eroded out?
I guess I don't remember right offhand. I can't do the math in my head, but I think we did make an estimate on an inspection report.
One of the later exhibits. I'm looking for the number, though. Number 6, exhibit number 6.
I guess we didn't calculate the yardage. I'm not seeing it. I'm just seeing the dimensions.
Well, is that material lost, or is it in a holding pond and will be silted out and it still exists on the mine site?
No, it does not. This was directly to Coyote Creek. There's no sediment pond on Coyote Creek. This is a live perennial stream.
Okay. And I need to go back. I forgot to ask some questions on number 3. You mentioned the changes in taking the bend out of the low-flow culvert.
Yes.
But besides taking the bend out, which seems to have directed that more directly toward this island instead of veering off more to the right. Why was that done? Was there some advantage that was foreseen in it and discussed?
Okay, at that stage, I don't know that we really changed the location or the inlet and the outlet of that culvert substantially. I think they just made a design decision on their part to put a straight section in rather than try to put a band in. So I'm not sure that change alone was substantially different than the previous design. We're just noting we did get a change at this point of the process for the changing the culvert configuration, and then they also did note that they were going to use a cable concrete type product for erosion control rather than riprap for the box culvert.
So yeah, I see you're correct that the discharge point of it didn't change when it got straightened, because on the third diagram it's already straightened, but it's still kind of veering off almost toward the right side of that island. But then when you go to the fourth one, it seems like it's adjusted more to the left near the box culvert discharge
Correct.
Point
Correct.
And right up against that island. Why was that done?
I'm sorry. That I guess we don't know. That was a decision on the company's part. It's just the way it was.
It wasn't something that the commission approved or didn't approve. It just was something they just chose to do.
Correct.
And what about the erosion control features that are on these maps? I see they change over time for the box culverts, but they're drawn in, and I assume things, well, let me ask that. Is that something that the commission has to approve of, the erosion control features on those box culverts?
I don't believe so. I think they would be part of our plan review that our engineers would do to at least make sure that they're planning for some erosion control at these critical points, and whether they see it as reasonable for the project. I guess that's part of the area I don't get real involved with the review, out of my area of expertise.
And how many times were inspections done between the April, was it 13th inspection that you discussed, and then the June 25th?
I guess I don't know right offhand what the number would be, but generally we are at the mine once every other week, twice a month frequency for inspections, and we may have had extra ones to look specifically at a soil removal area or something to that effect.
So probably four or five times anyway?
Yes, that sounds about right.
And does the fact that the commission concerned itself with the erosion control features of the box culverts, but through those four or five inspections didn't require work to be done on the edge of that island, I mean, does that suggest that this was something that couldn't have reasonably been foreseen?
I'm not quite sure I followed.
During these probably four or five inspections, that the low flow culvert had been installed already, mm-hmm. and I haven't heard that the commission recommended some kind of erosion control, some riprap or some matting or something be placed there. If it wasn't requested by the commission, does that suggest that the erosion is an extraordinary situation and not something that could have been reasonably foreseen by the mine?
No, it does not. I think particularly in cases where we haven't had a chance to look at a plan ahead of time and give some thought to what may be needed if it's been missed, I guess there's still, I believe, an obligation on the part of the mine to watch their features. There are other programs and other permits that apply to this area that would require some monitoring and inspection of the stream work area.
Okay. And then somewhere in all this, there was a reference to a specific rule, and I went and read through that rule, and the rule right next to it in the book was 69-05.2-24-03. Subsection 5, subsection A, the one that was referenced was B. Mm-hmm. Number A, though, had to do with, and I didn't write it all down, but I'm paraphrasing it as extraordinary events. It mentions a 10-year, six-hour event. Is that a factor in this, or did this flooding event along the creek constitute anything extraordinary that should be looked at in evaluating this erosion situation?
I guess I don't know if we have full information on that, and I think we may hear more on that later, but we did notice that this flow appeared to stay within the high banks of Kyle Creek. So this was an it's a deeply incised channel, about 8 to 10 feet most of the places, but that flow stayed within that main channel. It did not spread out into adjoining areas. So it doesn't appear to me to be real extraordinary. This is something that may happen in that creek from time to time.
Okay. I have no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Morning. Thanks, Randy, for your testimony so far. Just to help me get just want to review the progression of events here quickly. You had back and forth with the company on the permit for their design on this crossing, correct?
Correct.
And on that number 47 of your second technical review letter, you offer some advice to the company and request. Did they do that? Did they implement number 47?
Yes, they did. They responded to that comment and made a change to the design that was.
So that's reflected in these changes.
Correct.
Here. Okay. In April 13th, you were out on the April 13th inspection report. On page 4 of 9, you might want to grab this. I'm going to read some specific language. You say I'll let you get to page 4 of 9 here.
Okay.
You talk about in the bottom, in that last paragraph, sort of the middle of it. Furthermore, it appears that potentially serious environmental risks are posed by installing the low flow culvert prior to diverting Kyle Creek flow through the box culverts. If they had put the box culverts in first, would this have happened? Is this basically, so what I'm asking is, you warned of this on April 13th, and then we have these issues on June 12th. Is what you warned about happening, did that actually then occur? Similar to what you were suggesting here, maybe not exactly.
Yes, it did. I think the main concern was, what if we get high flow events or a flood event? And the main concern was probably so we didn't back water upstream onto undisturbed land.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, and I didn't really give much thought to the intricacies of constructing it and have flood flows over the box culvert site. However, that these things are put in on highway projects and places too. So, but It did. I guess we didn't really foresee it like that, but I think the point we're trying to make is that this plan has been changed, and now the considerations and that we kind of based our approval on for this area and installing these culverts has all changed. Now the question was what would happen if we get a high flow event? We can't build this road, put as much fill in as we perceive that they were going to put in, and just back up water. So I think it was more of a discussion and a reminder to these folks to make sure you keep an area planned for flood flows that may not be able to be handled by the culvert that was installed.
Uh-huh. And why did the company change the plans and revert the order of installation of the low flow, doing the low flow first and then waiting for the box culvert? Do you know? And we can ask the company, too. I'm just curious if you ever got that explanation.
Enough. We've heard different things. I guess for me to say would not,
Okay. So you kind of outlined some of the concerns in the June 13th letter. Then you were out there on the 25th. That was a normal inspection, like a regularly scheduled inspection that coincided with you kind of Casey Boyd had called also, and so you just went out there, did your normal inspection, and addressed his concerns?
Correct.
Okay. And when you were out there, you just testified in response to Mr. Biela's question that your focus wasn't really on the low-flow outlet. Did you see any of this? You didn't see the erosion that occurred? Because that had occurred, these pictures had occurred already, I'm assuming, at
right.
that point.
It was. And it's humbling for me to have to visit with my supervisor when he shows me that picture, and I don't have on the ground straight-on pictures of that area.
Okay.
When we were out there, the flow in the river was slightly higher, so we don't get the full depth of this cut. I remember looking at that island area or this remaining part of the meander from the opposite side, from the area that the initial channel or the original channel came in. So it'd be opposite of where you're, it'd be off to the right-hand side of your picture that you're looking at, Commissioner.
Okay.
I took a picture from that way, a couple pictures from that way. There's a cut face on that side too. But that would have been right in the vicinity of where the outside bend of the river would have came around. I wasn't quite sure when I came back around to the other side and we're standing on the cofferdam, and I was asking questions about, where did this water come over the cofferdam? How much did you excavate? Did you let water in? Or, how did this work? How did we make this work without having a lot of erosion right at the cofferdam and over the excavation? I looked at that, and I made a mental note as we were talking that looks pretty serious compared to what I've seen from the opposite side, but I thought it was the same feature. So we get back to the office, and I'm going to think, I'm going to have to probably look at some pictures from previous visits to see if did this grow, did it get bigger, what's going on? And I have the aerial photo laid down on my desk, and you can plainly see that's a whole new feature.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of sent us on the course to go look at it on the 30th.
Okay. So is it typical when you find, because it doesn't, you don't really mention it in the inspection report on the 25th that I can see. But, if I'm wrong, maybe you can point to the part of that report where you do mention having to been aware of that piece.
I probably did not mention it in the 25th inspection report because I had nothing to offer on that.
Okay. So you do the inspection reports, then you went and looked at the aerial photo imagery mm-hmm. after that, and then that triggered the June 30th follow-up inspection.
Yeah, that would be basically.
Is that, what's the purpose of those aerial inspections? What does it give you that you can't get on the ground?
just a bigger view of the mine. I mean, this is a lot of acreage that we're trying to cover, both, you know, us and the mines in some cases. It's probably most beneficial for us to look at some of the reclaimed areas to see did a erosion feature like a gully or something show up, or is some vegetation out in a pasture not doing well at all, and we've been driving around it and not seen it from the ground.
So, is there any obligation that you're under as an inspector to notice something on the first walkthrough, or, you know, is the fact that you didn't, that this didn't register as obviously as it does from the aerial photographs when you're on the ground, is that a problem at all? I mean, are you under any obligation to notify the company the first time you're out there of something that is wrong?
I don't believe so. Of course, we'd want to notify them or at least express what we may be looking into if we are going to consider it an NOV, but to my knowledge, we're not obligated to get it on the first walkthrough.
All right. Then another question about the abatement measures that the company, I understand they came back with a plan, you guys approved it, they went forward with the abatement measures in a, you know, relatively quick manner. Were those abatement measures necessary for the long-term function of this drainage plan? Like, were they going to have to do this no matter what at some point, put in the riprap and take out the...
Yes, they would have. They would have to do either.
Okay.
Riprap or removal, as specified in the abatement plan.
Can you estimate why they didn't just do this right from the start? I mean, is it normal to put in a culvert and not finish off the erosion control features of that at installation?
I guess I don't know how to answer that.
All right. I'll ask the company about that one as well. Let's see here. On this, the final plans here, the May 15th version of the revision. So in Reclamation approved of this plan, correct?
Correct. And I think I tried to note that plan was the low flow culvert is already put in at that point, and the plan reflects the as-built or the installed culvert.
Mm-hmm. What is there any shortcomings of this plan that you can see now after this event, or is it just that they weren't able to finish it before they had this rain event?
I guess I wouldn't have much to say on either plan. It would be just a matter of protecting or carrying out accordingly.
Okay. And then you heard the company at the beginning talk about that this is kind of an isolated event, and their overall plan was solid, and we should be looking at the big picture, not this isolated event. What are your thoughts on that as it relates to the responsibilities that that you have under the reclamation laws?
I guess we have an obligation to look at what's being done at the time and how things are progressing and if there was damage. It doesn't really specify to us how big we make this picture. So I guess that's about all I can say on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Randy, for your testimony. You're not even getting close to 2 hours. We've had witnesses for 4 hours, so you've got a long way to go, all right? All right, just a few follow-ups to what's been asked. I'll give you my bias early. I did a lot of work when I was in the Marine Corps about trying to size culverts. And you'd size it 2 feet, and it'd be a 10-foot flow. And then you'd make a 30-foot culvert, and then it would be dry for 2 years. So, I mean, it's just the way that things happen sometimes. So are those questions best asked to you about culvert sizing and all that, or is that the next witness?
I would say leave that to the next witness.
All right. That's always the right answer.
Right? Definitely somebody else.
All right. So I'll hold off on all those till we get to the next one. You said earlier a steep stream bed. What do you call a steep stream bed? It was in the NOV write-up. This is a steep stream bed. What is steep? I'm just trying to get a – you've used that point. What is steep? Is that a 7 degree or a 6 degree? I'm trying to get a feel for – I saw it in the NOV write-up. And if you don't know, that'd be –
unfortunately, that may be in a poor choice of wording on my part for this, if that's in there.
I'm just trying to get a reference. What's a shallow stream bed? What's a – I mean, just
– Right, right. And I guess I don't know offhand because that terminology is used to classify different streams, but I don't know what greatest slope. And that would not have been what I would have tried to get at. It would have been a steep stream bank where we have a near vertical stream bank.
Okay, that might have been what I read, steep stream bank. So what is that? How do you define that in just layman's terms?
I guess steep. It's
I'll dig
steep
it out.
Things
then.
Are hard to walk on.
Okay. I'll find exactly where I read it at. I had a note on it. Well, what I was trying to get to is what's the drop from, let's say, 100 feet upstream to 100 feet downstream on the road? I mean, how much is this stream bed drop? Is this
that
like,
I don't know.
Is that a question the next witness might know that?
Next witness may know. It may be something we have to go and look up, too, to find the channel gradient or slope.
Well, what I'm trying to get to is the whole question of sizing of flow and what can be expected with water flow and speed and the sizing of the culvert. And that's kind of – and it gets to the question about when a company submits a plan and you have thoughts on it, Do they always do what you ask them to do, or how do you get into that back and forth? If the company thinks this is fine and you think something else should be done, I mean, if they don't do it what you tell them to do, is that okay, or is that something that bothers you guys?
I think mostly it's more of the back and forth type.
Well, is that how you get to the negligence, though? Because the recommendation was negligence, so... If you'd have told them to do A, and they would have done A, and this still would have happened, would then it have been negligence on their part because they did what you asked them to do? Is this negligence because they didn't do what you asked them to do?
I would have to go back to our rules, kind of outlines what they outlined for negligence and the amounts. But again, they did something that they didn't provide us initially. We don't know what the reason was for the change or what the repercussions were. They do have an obligation, it appears to us, to provide erosion control for the features they put in. There may be cases outside of our program that require immediate stabilization to work around a stream. I don't know, but they're on a daily basis working in the area. If they did not notice this or what happened, we don't have information. We don't have modeling numbers for this culvert and expectation. Can this culvert handle a 10-year, 6-hour event or not? So we don't have a frame of reference on this project. Because a lot of times we'll go into projects, we'll see damage happen, a pond overflow or something to that effect, but we can say that it was designed under engineering standards for this size event. We did it, we got a rainfall that reasonably matches that. It failed, some damage happened. It's in those cases we would probably be more, we have to go and fix it, not looking at a notice of violation.
But how did you get to negligence, though? I'm trying to make the step of, if you don't know the flow rate and what it should be designed for, how do you get to negligence if
I believe
you didn't
it was
have that?
Their obligation to design and to show us that it's able to handle expected flow rates in that creek.
So you don't feel
they did not provide design data for that.
So you don't have any design data from the company as to why they switched from the 136-inch to the 60-inch and then why they eventually were going to the box culverts?
Correct.
Not until in your back-and-forth discussion, that never came out?
No, this showed up on the day we went to the inspection. Okay.
Well, I'm just trying to it's kind of bizarre how this whole thing unfolded, quite honestly. And I guess that's where the company needs to figure out, answer these questions, because how did you get from the culvert to here? And I'm guessing it's a construction phasing. But I'm trying to go back to maybe just in plain English, why do you think they're negligent?
It's their project area. It's a stream. We have obligations for protecting stream. We have to answer for hydrologic impacts for an area. Albeit it's small, it was not protected. Our rules say you provide erosion protection.
So mitigating circumstances like a huge rain event, it doesn't matter. They're negligent because the erosion happened, and that's the way you'd interpret the laws and rules? So if erosion happens, they're negligent?
If there is no plan or measures taken to try and prevent that, it would, okay. You see, I'm trying to say is that we don't believe there was the adequate or similar design planning and consideration for that changing the box or changing the low flow culvert and the way they rearranged the installation around that bend to prevent or protect the area from erosion during construction as well as
okay. No, that's fair.
That's what we're trying to get.
Because to me, the pictures are pretty obvious. Their erosion took place.
Right.
It's just to get back to how and why it happened. So a couple other questions I had. So maybe this is also for the next witness. So when you look at their plans, you know, do you base it on a 100-year floodplain, a 500-year flood? Is that to the next witness too, I'm guessing?
That would be to the next witness. And
okay. Do you know how much rain actually fell from June 19th to the 21st?
I don't have it with me. I do have printouts from the reports provided by Kyle Creek for their rain monitoring stations and then from Mandan, I guess. For this particular flooding event was somewhat unique in that on the 19th we had kind of area-wide rains where I believe the mines may have got around an inch or so. We got maybe heavier in this area. But on the, I believe it was the 21st, we had heavy rains come through the upper end of the Coyote Creek watershed. It was kind of so south of the mine. They did not get hardly any rain at the mine, you know, in the neighborhood of a tenth or a quarter inch in talking to people at the mine that day and Casey Voigt. They did not get rain the 21st, but they had heavy rain upstream that started causing this flooding that people in the area started to note and started giving some forewarning to people downstream that this heavy flow was going to come through. So just a little background, what I do know of the rain amounts, I don't have them with me.
Well, and it kind of goes back to the sizing and what they should or shouldn't have done, so I'll hold off on that. Do you know from you walking the ground, did Coyote Creek, did it swell out of its banks anywhere else during this rain event? Did you look upstream at all and look like if it come out of its banks?
Not beyond the area around Casey Voigt's farmstead or the crossing, the turn to go into Casey Voigt's farmstead. So they were talking about a mile to the south and then probably a couple hundred yards to the north of the site that we looked.
Okay.
Only in areas where there was small, very low terraces.
Okay. Thank you, Randy. I think that was really it. And just thank you for your work. It's kind of like the same thing when we have our damage prevention cases. The staff prepares recommendations. We end up in these hearings. We make a decision. So I appreciate your work out there and what you're doing. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Commissioner Crispin.
I'm sorry, I missed a page of some notes that I had. That the aerial inspection, Was that in response to the complaint, or was that scheduled in advance and it just happened to be the day after the complaint?
It was scheduled in advance. It just happened to be the day of the complaint. We have to arrange for the flight time with the flight service to do this, so you have to do schedule in advance.
Like pretty far in advance?
I don't know exactly. I would say several weeks.
Okay. And what's the long-term function of the low-flow culvert? Is that just something to take care of the water while the box culverts are being put in, or does this have a long-term function?
It does have a long-term function as well, or at least that was the initial design or thought for these low-flow culverts. Part of the stream channel, as they arrange the haul road through there, some part of the stream channel, the natural stream channel, gets cut off from the box culvert crossing area. Well, the low-flow culvert would help keep water moving through those kind of isolated stream channel segments.
Is this haul road completed now?
I don't know.
Do you know if the culverts are working as they're going to long-term?
Installed, yes.
So assuming it's running at its normal flow rate at this point, is the water running through the low-flow culvert or through the box culverts?
Oh, it's been, I guess I don't know right at this time, but when I was out there about a month ago, it appeared most of the flow was coming through the box culverts.
Okay. And did I understand correctly somewhere in the paperwork for this, I don't believe it was discussed this morning, but that the change in the order of doing things with the between the box culvert and the low-flow culvert had to do with the washing out of an alternate road?
I think that's part of what I've heard, too, that for some reason they had either access they couldn't get the way they had initially planned, or...
Was that a county road?
I don't know. I don't know the exact road that was referred to.
Okay. So do you have any thoughts on whether anything... I mean, if a different crossing washed out the year before, does that tell us anything about the volatility of this creek on high water events?
It would, because if it is, if it's washing out on kind of a regular basis, we know that it's getting some high flows. Okay. Enough to do damage.
Okay, now I'm really done. Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any redirect?
Yes, I actually have quite a few. It may be appropriate to take a break.
Okay. We'll break at this point for about 10 minutes or so, 15
minutes.
We have
a little bit longer? Yes, please.
Okay. All right, we're back on the record. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, you can proceed with your redirect.
Thank you. I do have a series of questions. They are kind of in the order that they were coming up as it went around, so that doesn't mean they're in any logical order. And I didn't take time to rearrange them. Randy, the first thing I'd like to ask you is to... I did ask Mr. Biella not to use the acronym BMP, so he told me that means best management practices, but they keep referring to it and questioned you about it. I'm trying to find out what these are and whether I can go look them up someplace so that we can see if there was something this mine did that's listed as a best management practice. So what can you tell me about those?
First of all, I think best management practices is a generic term for practices used in various disciplines. Best management practices referred to in agriculture are not the same as mining, not the same as construction. I guess in our area, when we're referring to best management practices, it's usually things that we don't put together a specific design, engineering details on, but we have tools or things we try to use to replace, like vegetation that's been removed or we're trying to start. We need to put something down to kind of compensate for not having vegetation on a site for erosion. So BMP would be mulching, as an example. Silt fencing, we don't really design it. There's kind of this standard rule of thumb ideas on how much area you can run through a silt fence and have it still be effective. So you're just kind of by feel, practices, materials that we put down to, in our case, a lot of times is to prevent or control erosion or capture sediment.
So is there like a section in the permit, best management practices, or is there in individual sections, let's say you're talking about, let's get away from streams, pick a hypothetical, that's not a stream, so it doesn't, because I want it to be hypothetical, not related to this case. When you're discussing how they're going to handle some sort of feature, are there specific standards and then best management practices, or are the best management practices sort of inserted when you don't have any specific standards? Or can you think of any hypothetical where you used them in a totally unrelated area? Or where you wrote them up or used them as an obligation on the company?
I guess we use that terminology back and forth a lot. It's usually for sediment and erosion control. Small areas, pond removal sites. We've taken out all the vegetation that was in place. We've filled the basin of the pond, but now we have this area that's bare ground. We're going to have water coming across it. If we are comfortable with the amount of flow that's coming through there, it would be best management practices. And that would be things like silt fence, straw logs, mulch, getting it seeded, sumps.
Okay. I think I have a better understanding now. Thank you. I'm sure we'll hear more about it to flesh out that understanding. Now, you were asked a question by Mr. Biella. He asked you if you didn't agree that water quality or preserving water quality, and I don't have the exact words, but I think it was something to this effect, was an overriding purpose of the of reclamation and of the act that we're operating under. And I would like to ask you if preserving water quality is an overriding purpose of the reclamation laws and rules.
I would say it's not an overriding purpose of our reclamation rules.
Is it one of the purposes?
It's definitely must be one of the purposes. We do spend a fair amount of our time addressing hydrologic issues.
Now, when Ms. Fury was questioning you about erosion control options that the company could have used opposite that culvert, you were listing several. There are many there, and I don't remember them all. But what was going through my mind was that prohibition you had mentioned on direct of the Corps of Engineers about not doing anything in the stream during April 15th, I think, to June 1.
Correct.
And so of that list of possible options that could have been done that you were saying were possibilities to help prevent erosion, could any of those have been done during that prohibition time or not?
There would have been options during the prohibition time. Obviously, putting riprap at the toe or the base of, or in the stream would probably not be one of them during that prohibition time. But again, the erosion control fabric options, the plastic type panels would have been an option, I believe.
It wouldn't have been prohibited by the Corps.
Correct. You'd be outside the channel. You could do this work.
Okay. Now, you were also asked about when you became aware of this, the change in the plans, because a lot of this relates to the fact that what happened was not what was ever permitted. Can you tell me again how and when you became aware as staff of the change in plans?
It was during the April 13th inspection.
And was at that time, was the installation started or complete or not started yet of the new plan?
It was in progress.
Okay. So the change in their plans started before you were aware of it. You became aware during the implementation of that change in plan.
Correct.
And it took a site visit out there for you to become aware?
Yes.
Now, there were some questions about the volume of eroded material, and I wondered if you would be willing to make that calculation. I think you mentioned it was a simple calculation. Maybe you didn't. But if you or someone on staff could make that calculation over the noon break, perhaps, and we could then put that in the record, if it doesn't come up from the coal company.
Yes, we can do that.
You can do that? All right. So we will come back with that calculation of the volume of eroded material.
With this witness or with somebody else?
Well, with this witness.
Okay.
I doubt that there'll be too many questions about it. It'll be an exhibit and little exhibit, but this witness can lay the foundation for it.
It is in the NOV memo.
Oh, did someone find it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then perhaps at this moment in time, let's just reference where it is. Oh, in the memo.
Yep. The memo says the memo, to 130 cubic.
The memo is not in the evidence at this point in time.
Oh, it isn't.
But maybe it will be because there's something else we're bringing up out of there.
I see.
So does the commission, I was going to have him read another part of that memo. So would the commission like the whole memo in evidence now or just the number? I can bring this up.
I think the whole memo should be in the evidence because it outlines some of the.
I would agree with that, Commissioner Fedorchuk, that the whole memo should be placed on the record.
Okay. So for the record, I will get copies of this over the noon break. And you can give it, what's our last exhibit?
13.
We'll give it PSC staff exhibit 13. But okay. It is the memo that is written to the commission when the commission has a motion in front of it proposing a penalty, which is a procedural step in this process that has to happen when the company asks for a hearing. So the motion is from July 31. And it's the motion to propose the penalty and issue the notice. So it's kind of what prompts this for this hearing.
Okay. So right now I've got through Exhibit 8. You're going to, with different witnesses, have additional exhibits through 12?
Yes.
And so we don't have copies of this yet. Are you going to offer this memo through this witness too, or will that be offered later? How do you want to do that?
Well, I guess that I personally was simply going to ask him to read a section of it into evidence.
Okay.
And then the other note is this volume, which could be read into evidence. But if the commission wants it in the record, I don't know that my witness has to be doing the foundation for it. Does he?
Well, has Mr. Bielis seen this or had access to it? I mean,
it's docketed, I will get him copies.
Okay.
But it would have been docketed with the motion. And you may have, the company may have gotten it ahead of time, too.
Okay.
But it would be docketed when we docket that motion on July 31st.
All right.
I will sort that out and see if there's an objection at noon hour, if that's okay.
That's fine. So right now you're just going to have your witness read a portion of
yes.
it. We'll address getting it offered later on.
Yes.
All right.
Because I don't have any copies to hand out
okay.
right now. I can give it to Mr. Biello before the witness looks at it if you want.
Mr. Biello?
Well, this might just help. As part of the NOV, Mr. Deutsch wrote a letter to the mine on August 10th. That sets out the history, the seriousness, the negligence. And it says in that letter approximately 80 to 130 cubic yards of material were eroded and carried away by the stream. So
That's
probably in that letter.
Number. Yes, and it's probably the same language.
Maybe you just want to introduce this letter that was sent to the mine. It's up to you, I guess. But well, there it says approximately 80 to 130 cubic yards. So.
I'd have to look at the letter to see if the other thing is in there. The negligence explanation.
Yeah, it was a letter sent by Mr. Doyle to the mine informing them of the NOV.
Well, in any event, we don't have any marked exhibit or any copies yet,
no.
So we're going to have that. We're going to address that after a break, but right now.
He has the same thing highlighted that I do, so that's good.
So, Mr. Biela, you're fine proceeding in that manner?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Ms. Fury?
That's fine.
All right, go ahead, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
Okay. I would just like Mr. Kowalski, if he would, to read the statute that is not the rule, but the statute that is cited in the notice of violation as one of the provisions that the company violated and one of the reasons for the NOV.
Okay, and the introductory paragraph?
Well, I think you read the number. Just read the number and the headnote, the dark stuff, okay. And then flip to the right section, but it's like four pages later.
Okay.
And read the number.
38-14.1-24, Environmental Protection Performance Standards.
Okay.
And we're going to go to paragraph 15.
And then it's subsections probably. Or
section 15 is the proper, sorry.
It doesn't matter. We'll know. 15, and
okay.
Then what's the...
At 15, it reads, ensure that the construction, maintenance, and... post-mining condition of haul roads and access roads into and across the site of operations will control or prevent erosion and siltation, pollution of water, damage to fish or wildlife or their habitat or public or private property.
Okay, now that section mentions haul roads, but it mentions construction of haul roads. Am I correct?
Correct. It starts
as one of the types of things. And... was this erosion that we're talking about caused during construction of a haul road?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I have on that question. Thank you. So is it your understanding from your work in the division in that statute that the company has an obligation to control erosion when it's constructing a haul road?
Yes.
And is that obligation dependent? And your understanding in the job you do, is that obligation dependent on whether or not staff has A, noticed a problem, or B, and or B, told them about a problem?
No.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to show you this memo that was one of the documents presented to the commission with a proposed penalty when the notice was issued and the penalty was and the company was informed of the proposed penalty. And this will be in evidence, I believe, later. You can identify the memo by name and date, and then you can read the part I marked.
Okay, the memo I have here is from July 31st, 2015. It's addressed to the commissioners. The Subject to the memo's recommended penalty for NOV 1502 issued to Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, case number RC-15-495. And
who is the memo from?
Jim Deutsch, Dean Moss, and Randy Kowalski.
So is this one of those documents you mentioned early in your testimony that you often prepare for commission items on the agenda? Proceed to, there's two parts highlighted, but one's the volume, and we're looking for the other one, which relates to the negligence.
Okay. In this memo, you want me to start with the part that's highlighted or the entire paragraph?
Well, you can read the entire paragraph if you want. That's fine.
In the paragraph in our evaluation under the topic of negligence, our discussion, we stated, in this case, field plan changes instituted by Coyote Creek Mining Company during the culvert installation did not include the appropriate erosion control measures to protect areas near the culvert outlet.
Okay, thank you. And so I've shown you the rule that provides your testimony mentioned that the rule provides additional information for how you are to propose penalties and how what's the commission supposed to consider. And I'd like you to read the portion of the rule that relates to how you figure out what to propose for negligence.
Okay. Under section 69-5.2-28-12, titled Inspection and Enforcement Determination of Amount of Civil Penalty Factors.
Okay.
We'll find under subsection 3B, regarding civil penalties under this article, due to indifference, lack of diligence, or lack of reasonable care, or the failure to abate the violation due to indifference.
Okay, so we're not talking failure to abate here. So what are those three factors for that particular provision of negligence?
Due to indifference, lack of diligence, lack of reasonable care.
Okay. So is it safe to say that the staff's recommendation on the negligent penalty was because of the line you read from the memo that showed lack of diligence or lack of reasonable care?
Yes.
Anything else? I think that's all we have at this time. Subject to possible need to recall the witness, since we don't have any real information yet about the other side's case.
Sure. Mr. Biello?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay.
One question, Your Honor.
Sure.
Randy, are you aware that on the day that the precipitation flows were expected at the mine, that Don Steffen did call Dean Most with the PSC and inform him that this was going to occur?
I seem to recall that, yes.
And that Don, do you know if Don indicated to Mr. Most that the mine was going to take measures to try to prevent erosion yet that day before the water reached the mine?
I don't remember any details or even being informed of that.
Okay. I have nothing further.
Okay. Ms. Fury?
Just following up from Mr. Biela's question, since it was stated that the mine said that they were going to follow up with erosion control measures, in your review, did that adequately occur?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Did adequate erosion control measures occur?
At what?
At the island site, opposite of the exit of the low culvert.
Not to my knowledge. I think we went to the point of removal.
Thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
No other questions.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Your Honor.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to beat the dead horse a little more about the negligence. So how do you define reasonable?
I would say it would be somewhat dependent on your position or responsibilities, but if you're designing a culvert crossing, you have to have some knowledge of factors that could cause erosion. We don't know if at some point erosion was noticed on this bank starting, if that was, we don't know if there are other inspections done in regard to other permits that apply to this site outside of our agency that would have required routine inspections. We don't know. So I guess reasonable would be is if you see a problem, something is done to address it. I mean, this is an area that is not controlled by a sediment pond. I mean, if this erosion occurred within the mine upstream of a sediment pond, this would probably not be, we probably would not be here today.
Sure. Do you think if it wouldn't have rained, we'd be here today?
No, if it wouldn't have rained, we probably not. We would have had a dry condition. We would have most likely not had erosion to that bank. So
the company's plan was reasonable if there was no rain.
Correct.
How do we assess what their plan was reasonable for with the amount of rain? Was it reasonable for 2 inches of rain? Was it reasonable for 10 inches of rain? How do we assess that?
I think a part of our design criteria for drainage structures, culverts, are based on certain sized rain events. And to date, we have not seen any information on what that culvert would have been able to handle event-wise.
Okay. Thank you, Randy.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Just briefly to follow up on the culvert size. Was the culvert size the issue here? If the culvert was too small, wouldn't the water have gone over it? Is it just that there wasn't erosion control on the bank across from the culvert? Or help me understand how the culvert size affects this issue.
I'm not exactly sure. I think it would have came into play either way. A smaller culvert would have increased the chances for overtopping the work area. As far as erosion, both of them are going to be exiting with a velocity, depending on what the flows are coming at it, directly into the opposite bank of this creek. It's material that's, you know, fine, sandy, silty-type material generally that erodes easily. So once that process started, it appears that it washed away.
Would a larger culvert have decrease the speed of the flow, perhaps?
I wouldn't venture to say. In this
okay.
Case,
thank you.
Ms. Jeffco-Tacco, anything further for the witness?
I have nothing further.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kowalski.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks, Randy.
We'll call our next witness, Bruce Johnson.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. Before you testify, I'm required to give you the oath, advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both, and being advised of the penalty for perjury. Do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. Could you please again state your name for the record and spell your last name?
Bruce Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N.
And for the record, where are you employed and what is your business address?
I am employed at the North Dakota Public Service Commission, Reclamation Division. The address is 600 East Boulevard, State Capitol Building.
And what is your position?
I'm an environmental engineer.
How long have you held this position?
I have held it approximately 20 years.
Can you briefly describe your responsibilities in this position?
My responsibilities are the engineering review of surface coal mining permits, also the inspection and enforcement of the surface coal reclamation laws for the mines here in North Dakota.
I've got the wrong version
here. I think I've got the wrong version too.
But. Yeah, well, that's okay. You know the answers. I don't, so. Okay. So what is your education?
I have a Bachelor of Science, Geological Engineering, University of North Dakota from Grand Forks in 1990.
And what are your other professional qualifications?
I'm also a professional engineer.
Okay. Now, can you tell me a little bit about your responsibilities with respect to the Coyote Creek Mine?
I am the principal engineer on the Coyote Creek Mine permit and an inspector. As an engineer, permitting involves the engineering review of certain portions of the permit, haul roads, surface water management, said pond design, blasting, and worst-case bonding. The engineering design proposed in the permit must meet the performance standards specified in our rules, the North Dakota Administrative Code, Article 69-05.2, surface coal mining and reclamation operations, and the laws governing surface coal mining and reclamation operations of North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 38-14.1. Once a permit is granted, unannounced inspections are conducted to verify that the mines are conducting the mining and reclamation operations as approved and specified in the permit. In situations where the mine operator has not followed the procedures in the permit or has allegedly caused environmental harm or degradation or has created a public safety hazard, a notice of violation may be issued. If a notice of violation, NOV, is issued, the proposed fine is based on history, seriousness, and good faith effort to remediate the violation. Recommended fines are generally based on past precedent for similar violations, and a recommendation is reached with input from the inspector that issued the violation, the director, the assistant director, and possibly other staff that may be involved with the mine cited as an engineer, scientist, or inspector.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience in carrying out the duties you just described for the 20 years you've worked for the Reclamation Division?
I estimate that I have reviewed hundreds of permits, not permits in themselves, but permit revisions, and conducted hundreds of complete and partial inspections in my career at the Reclamation Division. I have personally written or have been involved with at least 7 notices of violation in my career and several informal conferences resulting from the NOVs.
I offer the further testimony of this witness as that of an expert.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Okay. The testimony of Mr. Johnson will be received as that of an expert.
Did you review Coyote Creek's plans for the shop access road in permit NACC 1302?
Yes.
In reviewing mining plans and permit applications, what are the regulatory requirements for ensuring that a culvert can handle certain flows?
For primary roads with culverts, North Dakota Administrative Code Article 69-05.2-24-03 states that the drainage control system must be designed to safely pass the peak runoff from a 10-year, 6-hour precip event or greater event as specified by the Commission.
And I'll just make a short correction. It's not article, it's section.
No.
Yeah, that's okay. Not your problem. There's been a lot of discussion regarding low-flow culverts and box culvert installations at Coyote Creek already, but we get to have some more now. Were the flows through the culvert modeled by the company in the permit application?
Flows through the low-flow culvert were not modeled by the company. The construction schedule for the culverts in the permit showed that the box culverts were to be installed first, and the single 60-inch culvert would be installed after the box culverts. Because the box culverts were to be installed first and were safely sized to pass a 50-year six-hour event, there is no need to model the 60-inch low-flow culvert. After construction of the shop access road began, Coyote Creek Mining Company changed the order of construction of the culverts, where the 60-inch culvert would be installed first. For high flows, the permit stated that the high flows were to pass over a low portion of the access road to the west of the 60-inch culvert. However, if a high flow situation occurred, it would also impact the 60-inch culvert.
Have you done any modeling of the low flow culverts for this mine?
Yes.
What methodology did you use?
I used the culvert design routine and the hydrology module of Carlson Civil 2016, a civil engineering software suite. The software uses Manning's equation to solve for rates of flow and velocity of flow. The culvert geometry, such as diameter, type of entrance, length, culvert material, and roughness coefficient, were obtained from the permit number NACC-1302, Revision 1. The modeling involves inputting a range of headwater values and tailwater values, and the software runs the equation solving for the rate of flow in cubic feet per second and velocity in feet per second for each input value. The software also has several reporting methods for the output.
Is the methodology you used a standard accepted methodology in your business?
I believe it is. Manning's equation is commonly used in open channel design.
So tell us a little bit more about how you did the modeling and the results.
Okay. I considered two flow situations, inlet control of the culvert and outlet control of the culvert. Where inlet control prevails, the discharge is dependent only on the inlet geometry and headwater depth. Inlet control will exist as long as the water can flow through the barrel of the culvert at a greater rate than water can enter the inlet. In an outlet control situation, the discharge is dependent on all of the hydraulic factors upstream from the outlet, such as shape, slope, length, surface roughness, tailwater depth, headwater depth, and inlet geometry. Outlet control will exist as long as water can enter the culvert at a greater rate than water can flow through it. Outlet control would most likely happen if the tailwater, that's the water elevation or depth at the outlet of the culvert in Coyote Creek, increased to the point where the outlet of the culvert is submerged. I estimated maximum elevations of the headwater from photographs taken by PSC staff on June 25, 2015, and from topographic contour maps contained in permit NACC-1302. In both situations, inlet control and outlet control, the flow velocity from the outlet of the culvert exceeded the accepted allowable velocity for the channel conditions near the outlet of the culvert.
I have an exhibit. Now I'm showing you what's been marked as PSC Staff Exhibit 9. Do you recognize this document?
Yes.
What is it?
It's a culvert rating table.
And what is a culvert rating table?
The culvert rating table shows the flow capacity of the culvert at a range of headwater depths.
And was this produced by you or under your direction and control?
Yes.
I move the admission of Exhibit 9.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Exhibit 9 is admitted.
Now we have 10. And now I've given you what's been marked as PSC Staff Exhibit 10. Do you recognize that document?
Yes.
And what is that?
This exhibit is composed of two photographs showing the high water mark near the 60-inch culvert inlet in an area upstream of the 60-inch culvert showing vegetation affected by water flows and a trash line from the high water elevation along the stream bank?
Did you use these photographs in your modeling? And if so, for what purpose?
I used the photographs to estimate the high water elevation for input into the culvert rating table.
Were they taken by you or others in the division in the regular course of business?
The photos were not taken by me, but were taken in the regular course of business by Reclamation Division personnel who performed the inspection of this mine on June 25, 2015. The photos are part of the records of the Reclamation Division for permit NACC 1302.
I move the admission of Exhibit 10.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Exhibit 10 is admitted.
Okay. I did these together because I think he needs to talk about them together. So can you tell us now, explain to us what we see in Exhibit 9? What does Exhibit 9 mean to us?
Okay. The rating table shows the expected capacity of the 60-inch culvert. The extreme left column shows the headwater elevation, and the two columns on the right show the discharge in cubic feet per second and exit velocity in feet per second.
You highlighted, there's two tables there, and you highlighted a line in each one. Can you tell us something about why the highlights are on the exhibit?
Okay, the flow velocities of 8.91 to 10.95 feet per second are considered. I think I just read your question, but the highlighting shows the velocities that what would be the high water mark for that day, and they show, for example, under inlet control, it's 10.95 feet per second, and outlet control would be 8.91 feet per second.
Okay, so you highlighted them because you wanted to point out what would the result velocity be at the 1895
yep.
headwater. Is that correct? Okay.
I would consider this velocity to be erosive for the conditions immediately downstream of the culvert.
Would the natural vegetation on the opposite bank of the culvert outlet have been sufficient to prevent erosion?
The vegetation on the opposite bank of the outlet is primarily on the top of the soil and not on the sides, so it would be my opinion that the vegetation would not be sufficient to prevent erosion.
Are there any engineering standards or principles that indicate at which flow velocities natural vegetation is adequate to prevent erosion?
Yes. The NRCS, USDA, that's the National Resources Conservation Service, United States Department of Agriculture, published a handbook, Part 654-, it's National Engineering Handbook, Chapter 8, page 8-7, that lists what is allowable velocity in channel design. If the channel material is sandy silt or silty clay, the handbook recommends an allowable velocity of 2 to 3.5 feet per second, respectively. Another reference commonly used by mine operators in North Dakota is Applied Hydrology and Sedimentology for Disturbed Areas by B.J. Barfield, R.C. Warner, and C.T. Hahn. And this publication also lists a table, Chapter 3, page 162, of allowable velocities for open channels. If the channel material is alluvial silts, non-colloidal, the allowable velocity is 2 to 3.5 feet per second, which agrees closely with the NRCS-USDA reference.
I'm showing you what's been marked as PSC Staff Exhibit 11. Do you recognize this document?
Yes.
What is it?
This document is comprised of the copies of the tables I just discussed from Part 654 of the National Engineering Handbook, Threshold Channel Design of Allowable Channel Water Velocities, and from the Applied Hydrology and Sedimentology for Disturbed Areas showing limiting velocities for open channels.
If you had to produce these actual whole books, do you have them upstairs or online?
I have Chapter 8 online, and I do have a copy of the Barstead and handbook.
Okay. I'm not asking for that. I'm just heading off a question. What is meant by the allowable or limiting velocity for a channel?
The allowable or limiting velocity is the maximum velocity of water to avoid erosion for different types of channel soils and linings.
Now, is the information contained in this exhibit, was it produced by you?
No, it was just a copy of the reference.
Is it a recognized reference used by engineers and others in the mining industry?
I think quite a few of the mining companies used the Barstead and Hahn. I know early in my career that was a common reference when there were questions about surface water management.
I move the admission of Exhibit 11.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Okay. Exhibit 11 is admitted.
Are you aware of any photographs of the Coyote Creek stream bank immediately downstream of the culvert installation from a date prior to the June 22 flood event?
Yes, I'm aware of and reviewed two photos taken by Guy Welch on April 28, 2015 that show the condition of the stream bank at the culvert outlet location.
So now I'm showing you what's been marked as exhibit, PSC staff exhibit 12. It's got two pages, 12-1 and 12-2. Do you recognize this?
Yes.
And what is it?
It's the photos I just referenced, taken on April 28, 2015.
Were the photos taken by you or others in the division in the regular course of business?
The photos were taken by Reclamation Division personnel who participated in the April 28th inspection in the regular course of business and are records of the Reclamation Division for this permit.
So please tell the Commission what it is about these photos that you find relevant to your analysis.
The photos show the condition of the Coyote Creek stream bank in the vicinity of the low-flow culvert outlet.
I move the admission of Exhibit 12.
Mr. Biella?
No objection.
Ms. Fury?
No objection.
Exhibit 12 is admitted.
In your opinion, would the vegetation that is visible on the photos, i.e. on the opposite bank of the culvert outlet, would it be sufficient to prevent erosion of the bank?
No.
In your opinion, as a professional engineer with substantial experience in surface mine permitting operations and reclamation, should additional measures have been taken by the company to prevent erosion of the bank?
Yes. The bank opposite the culvert should have been armored with riprap or concrete flex mat.
That's all we have at this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Biella?
Mr. Johnson, through your testimony, you talked about preventing erosion, but I think if we look to the NOV, it's not for failure to prevent erosion, it's for failure to control. Is that correct?
I'd have to read the NOV to see the change in the words there.
Show was marked as PSC Exhibit 1.
It might still be up on the desk at the bottom. Did you leave them all up there?
I think Randy took them all.
Randy, why don't you put them all back up there? Okay. We can put all those exhibits back up for the witnesses, but if you can get him number one. Take a minute. Let's look that up.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Through your testimony that you've just given, you've talked about preventing erosion, but the NOV cites the mine not for failure to prevent, but for failure to control erosion. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, when you modeled the culvert, did you state which event this culvert should be sized for?
actually, this culvert was modeled just with that storm event that happened as a result of June 22nd, the precipitation event. And the elevations were taken from those photographs that were introduced as exhibit N, I believe.
I think it was 10.
You talked about modeling for that June 22nd event. Were your calculations based then upon what you perceive to be the maximum event that could have occurred?
I don't know what the size of the event was. The photos show what I believe to be the maximum water line that's shown on the access road embankment.
But if you don't have the precipitation event data, how can you give a truly accurate representation of what
all I need is the headwater elevation to determine the capacity of the culvert.
You're saying you don't need to know the volume of flow and the speed of that flow also?
Just the headwater.
I have no further questions.
Ms. Fury.
Are erosion prevention measures a way to control erosion?
Yes.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
Exhibit 12, number 2. I don't know what I'm looking at or what direction this one... Yes,
I believe the low flow would be in this area.
Off to the right of the...
I believe so. And then this, it's just to show the condition of the opposite bank.
So what we see of the island on the upper right-hand corner of this picture is kind of the opposite side of the island from where it eroded.
Kind of.
Okay. Do you have any knowledge about another crossing that washed out the year before?
A little.
Can you tell me what you know about it and...
I'm assuming you're referring to the crossing, the Casey Voigt's farmstead?
Well, I don't know, but let me ask the question a different way. Before the order of construction was changed to put in the low-flow culvert first instead of the box culverts first, was the plan to use a different crossing?
My understanding was that they were to access the box culvert construction from the west. And at some point in time, that was not possible.
Okay. No other questions.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Just a couple questions, Bruce. First of all, you made all these calculations for the flow velocity. Could they have done anything to change the flow velocity?
Well, actually, kind of the backup, the culvert was never modeled in the permit, so no velocities were ever given for it.
And was that an error? Should they have modeled the velocities? Are they supposed to have done that?
In hindsight, I could say yes, possibly, but if they would have done the box culverts as they originally planned, and that's why... it wasn't modeled because the box culverts were sized for the 50 or 6 hour event. So the 60 inch culvert would just be for what it was intended, just the low flows. the normal flows in the creek.
So this, your calculations here were simply to show that this velocity was far too high to allow the protection of just the, you know, grasses, et cetera, on the bank to hold and be enough.
That's correct.
They needed more erosion control. Okay.
I think the other thing that the exhibit 12, I believe, 12-1, these aren't the best. It's always nice to have better pictures after the fact, but it shows the closeness of the opposite bank.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a culvert that's 5 feet in diameter, and we probably got the bank that's, you know, four culvert diameters away, you know, maybe 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what the exact distance is, but it's close.
Okay. Then I want, you guys handed these out, but you didn't really talk about pictures 10-1 and 10-2.
Okay. This is, we're taking June 25th during the regular, well, during the inspection, and this shows the vegetation. It's kind of have this dirty color. It's also kind of laid down.
Are you referencing 10-1 or 10-2? 10-2.
Okay. So on 10-2, and then just use direction. So the record's just oral, like right or left or top or bottom or something.
On the right of the photo where it says vegetation flattened from water flow,
mm-hmm.
you can see that the vegetation it's dirty colored. It's also laid down in a direction of flow. Also on the left side of the photo where it says trash marking high water line, it looks like there's a trash line which is commonly left after high water levels, high water marks.
Okay.
All the straw and debris, mm-hmm. grass that these flows pick up. And it was from these that I determined the maximum water elevation of that event.
Okay.
And that's what I used to model the culvert.
Where is the culvert in this, which direction is the culvert in this
the
picture?
The culvert would be on the right, to the right of this photograph.
Okay.
10-2.
So this is before the culvert? This is how high the water was upstream. Okay. All right. And then 10-1.
10-1 shows the high water line on the road embankment on the right side of the photograph. And then in the center is the inlet of the low flow culvert.
Yep. So the water at one point was all the way up and backing up to the left and around that bend, all that wet area, that was all?
I believe so, and I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if even this area became slightly inundated.
And this area, you're pointing to what?
This would be to the left side of the photograph, this kind of a little, it's within a stream meander.
So is all the dirt then, was there more dirt in there that probably was washed away as well in this area, from this area?
I would guess some was eroded.
Was that part of the calculation as well?
No.
Is there any, are they expected to, in a high, you know, a kind of an extreme rain event like this, are they expected to have measures in place to prevent this kind of water backup and erosion on this side too?
Well, again, and this was unexpected, but they do have some best management practices installed in this area. They have the silt fences.
Okay.
And they have some rock riprap to protect the drainage in the ditch coming down to the culvert.
And the box culvert is kind of in the middle right. Is that the box culvert?
Yeah. It's kind of in the center. It's right over. You can kind of see the parts over here.
You're looking at 10-1 now?
Yes.
This is 10, okay. Yeah, 10-1.
Okay. Is it typical for these roads to be put in and then and used and then come back later and put a box culvert through? Or put the proper drainage through? So this, basically, they were able to make this road because of the low-flow culvert inlet.
They had to have access across the creek to start construction, so that's what it was used for.
Okay. All right. I think that's all my questions, Bruce. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk.
Excuse me. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Bruce. To further clarify Commissioner Crispin's question, for 12-1, 12-2, and 8-3, is that the same green fence I see or that same green gate, just different angles of it?
I believe it is.
Okay. That's what I think Randy asked, the same kind of question. So just different angles of the same area. Okay. And then I know just enough about fluid mechanics to be dangerous, so I'm not going to try to match wits with you here, Bruce, okay? On Exhibit 9, okay, so you're telling me that at elevation 1895 on the top chart, assume inlet control, that then tailwater is 1890. What is that headwater, tailwater? Walk me through what the differences there are.
I just used this number 3 feet, just because the photos showed that there was some tailwater where the culvert has water kind of backed up into the outlet of it.
Okay.
And then, of course, as the flows increase, the culvert, you know, then the headwater or tailwater is going to, the exit flow depth will increase.
So you're telling me, but based on this reconstruction, that the exit velocity when it entered the inlet was 10.9 feet per second?
It doesn't tell you what the velocity is when it comes in there. It's what it exits, the exit velocity.
Okay, then. All right, well, then the bottom chart there, this is where I'm confused in. Assume outlet control, and it's the same elevation, and then there's a different exit flow depth. Talk to me. I'm not equating what you're trying to show me here.
Okay, now, this is where the tailwater was increased to where the outlet was totally submerged.
Okay.
And then so that's the outlet control, and then the culvert isn't as efficient in that state, so it's going to be a little bit less capacity.
Okay, so in any scenario, your best guess is that it was at least 8.91 feet per second when it was exiting.
And it may not have been in tail control ever or outlet control ever. I don't know. But so,
what do you mean?
I just did the two. Just to kind of cover my bases, I did both scenarios because it could have gone from an inlet control to an outlet control, transition to that, you know. I don't know because I wasn't there to see it.
But you're telling me this is your best guess is at least 8 feet per second, 8.9, or what's
if this condition happened, that's what the velocity.
And using your equation and elevation and all that, that's what you came up with, right?
Yep.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, that's 1895.95 headwater. So when you look at the, let's see here, Exhibit 10A, that is 1889.51 is the elevation of the inlet, correct? According to this?
Yep, that's the bottom.
All right, so looking back at your chart, it looks like if 1891, which is roughly 2 feet higher, that your exit velocity is in a range of 2 feet per second to 1.27 feet per second, correct?
Okay, but these tailwater elevations, that's the outlet of the culvert, so that's not on here. So that's like, I think, a couple feet lower.
So it's even lower yet?
It's right.
Okay, so that would mean the flow would even be lower than what this is?
It's just the tailwater's added on to the outlet invert elevation.
What I'm just trying to get to it, my intuition, based on what I remember back from the day, is that based on a normal flow, this is sized correctly. for the exit velocity, if given the range, what you testified to?
Yeah, it's typical of a culvert that size.
Okay, so if they're assuming normal flow, they've got the right size culvert.
Right. I don't have a culvert size is fine.
Okay, but
I'm just this rating table is just to show the velocities, and what I'm just trying to show is that these velocities for the soils on that opposite bank, this is an erosive velocity.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that. I agree that your modeling is correct, and I think your math is sound. It's just I'm trying to equate that they've designed this culvert for normal flow, and it appears to be reasonable numbers, and somewhere between what happened, it's not reasonable. So what was the reasonable size for them to build this culvert? How do you know? I mean, if they probably should have had a 10-foot culvert to slow down based on the flow at 1895.
But recall, this was not supposed to be used in situations like this. The box culvert was supposed to take the big flows.
Okay, so have you modeled the box culvert? Is that one big enough for this event?
Plenty big.
Okay, so what is the flow coming out of the box culvert?
I don't have those figures with me, but it's a 4-10-foot box sections. I mean, it's as wide as this room and about as tall as the ceiling. It's big. It handles that 50-year, 6-hour event
easily.
Easily.
Okay. So you think it was unreasonable for them to size this way? Or
no.
You think it was okay?
Size is fine.
Well, it's
the order. It's the order that's the problem.
Okay.
See, they should have built the box culvert first, and then, this was supposed to be done second.
And you testified, I think, earlier you don't know why they did what they did.
I hear things, but I mean they didn't have access from the west.
Okay, I think I understand what you're trying to. Point to get to here is that clearly was they should have known that they should have protected that far shoreline, for lack of a better word.
I think
given the exit velocities of these swells and events.
I think when you look at that one photograph, 12. I didn't see this. Exhibit 12-1. You can see the closeness, and it's just grass, and I'm saying that's dirt. I mean, that's just bare. And also, it's a silty soil. They erode easily.
So to beat the dead horse again, so your point is that they put this 60-inch culvert in. They made the decision to do this first. They should have known what the flow was going to be through that culvert based on what was coming, and they should have known to protect that far shoreline.
Well, that's a hard question because I think nobody knew what it should be because nobody modeled it. I didn't model it. And there's no modeling in the permit.
But that's a question that we'll get to with the company, though. When they decide to put a culvert in, they should know what it can handle based on what's upstream.
They're ultimately responsible.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Thank you, Bruce.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Just one quick follow-up, Bruce. To install some of the, concrete mats and other erosion control measures on opposite of this outlet, is that a complicated process, time-consuming experience?
I don't think it is, but the access to that might be difficult just with all the water and the construction going on, and it's probably a muddy site. I wasn't out there much this spring, but I really couldn't say.
Okay.
Yes, it's be up to them.
Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, redirect.
I think we have one, if I can read this handwriting. Mr. Johnson, do you recall the length of time that the 60-inch culvert was the only option for flow with no box culvert option? I mean, do you recall if that was a couple of months when it was only 60-inch available and not the box culvert to take any of the flows?
It probably was a couple of months. I think it was in April when they first started building it. The plan early on was a 36-inch culvert, and from photographs taken on an inspection, I noted it was seemed to be a much bigger than a 36-inch, and that kind of got some discussion going.
Okay, and I had one more question just on your modeling. I just want to be sure I understand. The modeling, all hypotheticals based on inputs which you've described, but compared to the standards that you would reference in the manual, in the engineering handbook or the other document, even if you're wrong about the headwater being 1895, the velocity, you'd have to be a lot wrong to get down into the velocity level that was recommended in those books, correct?
Correct.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Biello?
What appears to have happened here is that the mine was cited for violation of design and construction standards, which assume that the road and was completed and certified as a primary road. But it appears to me that what's happening here is you're trying to cite the mine for a completed road when it's not yet completed. Is that correct?
You know, a primary road is any road that's used for hauling coal, access to active mine areas, or just as an access road. And even though it wasn't certified, it still has to meet, even under construction, doesn't absolve them of, you know, letting sediment run wild or go anywhere. I mean, they still have to control the sediment. Control the erosion.
But the citation in the NOV for the violation is for a primary road. This was not yet a primary road because it was not yet certified. Isn't that correct?
It hasn't been certified, but I would say it's being used as a primary road.
It's not being used to haul coal, is it?
No. But it's used
just for construction purposes.
And also it's a road, any road that's in being used for a period of 6 months, I believe, or longer, is a primary road.
But it has to be certified first, and it hasn't been certified, has it?
Well, roads aren't certified until they're completed.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Ms. Fury?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Commissioner Christman?
No, sir.
Commissioner Fedorchak? Commissioner Kalk?
One more.
Okay.
Bruce, what's your best guesstimate on what's the flow of the river in normal time frame this summer? You know, based is it the 2 feet per second? Is it 10 feet per second? What's your just on the river flow?
I would say it's pretty low, maybe 1, 2.
Okay.
I mean, you just look at it on a nice summer day. It's not very fast.
Okay. If that rain event happened, the one that you modeled, 1895?
I'm not really modeling a rain event.
Okay. You're modeling the max pressure on the one side.
I'm just modeling the capacity of a culvert under different headwater conditions and tailwater conditions. It really has nothing to do with what happened June 22nd, the precip event.
So if I'm trying to get to the question that let's take that whole, whether it's a primary road or not a primary road, okay, let's take that out of that. If this event happened, is there any way to know what would have happened had that road not been there? Maybe this flow would have scoured that corner, whether this road is there or not. How could we know that?
You could probably just look at any other part of Coyote Creek, what happened to it.
So if we could find other areas in Coyote Creek that had scouring unrelated, that would say that they were reasonable because it happened in other areas?
I really don't know what happens to Coyote Creek. Just because I've never seen it, I haven't witnessed it during an event. It can be modeled, but I believe the watershed, I believe, is over 100 square miles for this part that leads up to the mine. So only a portion of that watershed received that precip event. So there's just a lot of variables here to say what would happen in a given situation.
So can you say conclusively that the scouring wouldn't have happened if that structure wouldn't have been there?
Well, I think that island has been there for a long time before Coyote Creek mining showed up. That's my opinion. It's, okay. It's on the topo map, so you can see it.
So what should we conclude from that?
Well, their culvert eroded a portion of that island.
Okay. Thank you.
That's my opinion.
All right. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, anything further?
Yeah, I have a couple on this last note. I know we've mentioned this, but let's just bring it back around. Are you aware of any erosion control on the opposite side of the culvert that the mine put in?
No.
So there's a total lack of erosion control measures on the opposite side of the culvert, correct?
Correct.
Also, I can't wait to hear more about primary roads when it's their turn. But I'm going back and I'm going to read you subsection 15 from the statute written up in the NOV. Ensure that the construction, maintenance, and post-mining conditions of haul roads and access roads into and access and across the site of operations will control or prevent erosion and siltation, pollution of water, damage to fish or wildlife or their habitat or public or private property. So I don't see the mention of primary road anywhere in that. Your testimony is about modeling velocity hitting a bank during construction of an access road, is it not?
Correct.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Mr. Biella?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Ms. Fury?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Commissioner Christman?
No, sir.
Commissioner Fedorchek? Commissioner Culk? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
And we do not have anything further, subject to reserving an opportunity to recall if necessary.
Okay. Probably a good time to break for lunch. Start up again at 1. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
I have to go home to an empty house.
Oh, no. You're going to be sad.
I'm kind of excited, actually. I wouldn't want an empty all the time. But being able to show up occasionally during the day and have nobody down. Because that never happens. Now, I know I'll curse the days that I thought this because when they're gone, like, it'll be up to all the time. But right now, it's